Hi, this is Julie, and I want to thank you for downloading this podcast of The Conversation. And I want to encourage you to share it with a friend. You can just click on the share button and send it via email, Facebook, or Twitter. Thanks again for listening to The Conversation, and thank you as well for your support of Faith Radio. To become a partner with us in this ministry, just go to the Support Faith Radio tab on the website and find the Faith Radio station in your area. Now, enjoy this podcast of The Conversation. Well, happy Friday to you, friends, and
happy
welcome to
Friday.
The Conversation.
Hello, everybody.
My name is Heather Fleece, and I'm here today with my buddy Cindy Olson. And we are flying, I was going to say solo, but we're flying duo today.
We're doing a duo run, and the cat's away, and the mice will be playing.
Our friend Julie Nelson is out today. But we are here together, and we're so excited for this next hour and what we've got in store and what the Lord's got in store
Absolutely.
For our time together.
So this is a really exciting day. I have to say, I came in, and I was my heart, my tummy was a little jittery because I'm really excited about the guests we have today.
Yeah.
And I'm also just so grateful for the opportunity for ourselves and for our listeners to be able to talk.
Yeah,
with this lovely lady.
And we've had some wonderful guests on our show.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like, you know, we've been ramping up and scraping the bottom of the barrel
and
working our way up.
Not at all.
We've had some great folks on, but we are super excited today to have with us in studio Ruth Graham. She is an author, a speaker, a wife, a sister, a grandma, and also happens to be the daughter of Reverend Billy Graham and Ruth Graham. And she is with us, and we are so excited to have her be a part of the conversation.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Cindy, I don't know what it's like for you when you hear the name Billy Graham, but for me, it just brings up a lot of wonderful memories from growing up. I grew up in a wonderful Christian home in southern Minnesota, Faribault and Owatonna. And I'll tell you what, when the Billy Graham Crusade was on TV, it was the only thing we were doing in the Hinch household. Everything else stopped, and we would gather around the TV. And, you know, all of us love the Lord, and we're believers, but to listen to him and to hear the music of George Beverly Shea and to hear the testimonies of people, it was just, it truly was life-changing. And I just have such wonderful, incredible memories of that experience and that man. How about you? Was that the same for you?
You know what? It wasn't. But yet it wasn't an empty, you know, kind of blank page. There was definitely a memory I had. I was raised in a house where there wasn't a lot of faith in the daily life or even, you know, kind of throughout the year as much. It was a little more of a lack of that. And so I would stumble upon the Billy Graham Crusade on TV, and I was attracted to it, but it was also very foreign because it wasn't in my support system in my home. But I always felt that when I was watching him and when I would kind of listen, that there was a thread of resonation to what I was thinking about and what my heart kind of was interested in.
Yeah.
And I always felt very good about it. Yeah. I didn't always feel that when I turn on something where someone was speaking about various things. And I always kind of put that in my back pocket. And so as I was on my faith journey and as I became adult and started making choices on that journey and also God making some choices for me and opening some doors, I really started to admire so much of what, obviously, what Billy Graham had accomplished. But now, as the doors open further and seeing what his children are doing and his daughter Ruth, I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
Because there's so much of that that I really can relate to.
Yeah.
So I just see that there's like this wonderful bounty from a family that seems to really be giving the gift of generational spiritual ministry.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of thrilled because it's a new path for me.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Well, and Billy is an exceptional man in the sense of within our culture to have maintained integrity like he has throughout his life. It's not.
Mm-mm.
And like you said, then to give that gift of faith to their children, but then also to let those children live out that faith however they need to.
Right.
I'm really excited to hear Ruth
honesty,
talk about that.
The transparency.
Yeah.
And just being human about it and forgiving, it seems to be something that is not always presented when I may look on the TV or read about a family. And that's what I'm really excited to talk to Ruth about.
Yeah.
Is like, you know what? Sometimes we try to keep up faith, and that's not going to help us in our relationship with God.
I'm also excited to ask her a question about her mom and dad and whether or not it's true that they waited until they were married to kiss. Because I'll tell you what, most of you know I'm a junior high pastor. That's my job. I hang out with 7th through 9th graders, and we talk a lot about relationships and physical boundaries. And I always use the example with them about Billy and how they did not kiss until either they were engaged or married. And so I'm going to do some fact-finding as well to see if I've been lying for years. I hope not. I mean, in the name of the Lord, I guess I would say I was lying, but I hope it really hasn't been a lie.
Yeah, I really hope you don't get in trouble for that one. But I really also looked at some of the pictures of their family.
Yeah.
And I see like this effervescence and a bubbling and a kind of a little twinkle in eyes. And I'm really thrilled to see that. And I'm excited to talk about it because it seems like there's a lot of great energy in the Billy Graham family.
Yeah.
And but they're also, you know, there are also probably bumps in the road. But
for
I
sure.
just love to hear, you know what? Keep walking ahead. How do you do it? The world's going to come at you. I mean, you know the enemy's going to be like, I want to trip these folks up.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and the great thing I can assure our listeners about is they're not going to hear about a picture-perfect family today and a picture-perfect life. I think oftentimes within the Christian faith is what we feel like we need to put on this image or this facade of perfection. Mm-hmm. And I know that one of Ruth's commitments is that she wants to be real and she wants to be authentic. And sometimes that means talking about, you know, personal choices or struggles or bumps along the road, like you said. And I think people are going to be encouraged today
Let's
about what they're going to hear.
All of that now. Go fresh, walk in the sunlight, and just learn, open our hearts, and go for it.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Well, before we get to our wonderful conversation with Ruth Graham, Cindy, let's talk about what people are talking about.
Oh, right. Well, you know what? There are so many little funny things going on in our world. And, you know, one of them is I stumbled on this really clever little article about food etiquette. And I thought, you know what? It's, you know, let's get it. Let's see what you think of this.
I'm not going to be able to offer any help here. I eat my bacon cheeseburger and the grease just drips down my face.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so this is in other countries. For instance, in Thailand, don't put food in your mouth with a fork. It's actually considered, you know...
offensive?
Yeah, that it's really awkward and it's kind of tacky.
So with their hands instead?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know what? It's kind of like, let's turn some preconceived notions on their heads. Because in when we're, you know... talking about these things, I have to say they kind of relate to life. Like, we need things to be this way because they mean this. Well, that's not always the case.
Huh.
And impressions aren't always what you think. All right. So in Japan, never stick chopsticks upright in your rice. They're supposed to come in at an angle. And you're supposed to leave them on the side of the plate. Also in Georgia, which is... No, not the state, Georgia.
Okay, I was going to say, I love that we switched from Japan to Georgia.
No, Georgia, it's rude to sip your wine. You actually are supposed to wait for the toast, cheer, and then drink the whole thing all at once. But the cups are supposedly not that large.
Okay.
But, you know, it can be seen as, you know, what are you doing? Or this is not what it appears to be. So
I'm trying to just revel in this information and retain it for when I go to Thailand.
I know. I think we get so used in our patterns and we keep doing things the same way that it's like, you know what? Let's turn things on over a little and look at it differently.
Well, let's be honest. In our culture in America, we kind of think we have it right.
Yeah.
We think this is the only way that people do things in the way that everyone should do them. So it's good to know that people do other things other ways.
I have to say now and then in my spiritual walk, I think that too. I think this is the way you do it.
Yeah.
This is what it should look like. This is the way it's going to be. And then all of a sudden, it's not.
Isn't it refreshing when you meet someone who gives you permission to have it not be that way?
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, you know, I grew up thinking if you had a positive, powerful, quiet time, that quiet time was to be in the morning, typically as the sun was rising, and it would involve a cup of coffee and a Bible and some kind of a Devo chair. People always talked about a specific quiet time chair that they sat in. And I'll tell you what, I am not a morning person. I am a night person. And so when I was in the church, it was understood to me through what I perceived, I guess, that if you had a solid Christian, effective devotional or quiet time, it had to be in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
When the sun was rising, mm-hmm. over the lake. You had to have your Bible in front of you with a cup of coffee, and then you had to, you know, sit in a Devo chair. There's a special chair or a place in your house. And mm-hmm. I am not a morning person. I am a night person. And I remember feeling almost like I was failing mm-hmm. if I wasn't able to do that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that happens in so many areas of our lives, but definitely in our faith and our spiritual area. And I really think that it's sometimes very hard to realize, you know what? God is going to want to bring us in, I would think, right?
Yeah.
And he's going to want to see us as we are. And then to keep up appearances is mainly of this world.
That's right.
So it gets, you get kind of pulled in between. And then also you try to, you try to make time. But sometimes that needs to be for how you as a person can do it.
Yeah, well, he created us all individually. Mm-hmm. I think we forget that.
Yeah.
You know, that he knit us together in our mother's womb to be fearfully and wonderfully made. And that is not a cookie cutter wonderful. That is a different mm-hmm. wonderful. And so I love to be able to tell my students that it doesn't have to be in the morning mm-hmm. and it doesn't have to be sitting in a special chair. That I worship the Lord when I'm showering and cranking out worship songs in my
right.
bathroom and when I'm mm-hmm. serving other people and when I'm talking with girlfriends and when I'm studying the Bible with friends, when I'm praying with friends, that all of those things are spending time with mm-hmm. the Lord. And it's important to have that individual time.
Right.
I've learned that.
Right.
Psalm 46:10, yeah. Be still and know that I'm God. I know that. But still, there are so many other ways to interact with
Job
God.
Job is not Esther. Esther is not David.
No.
There's so many, and we are the same.
Yeah. Well, I have a feeling we're going to continue this kind of conversation as we interact with our wonderful guest, Ruth Graham, today here on The Conversation. Stick around. We'll be right back with Ruth.
I'm honored to share from Bert, who wrote, "Years ago, I did a mission trip with Robert Ewing in Kenya, and Brother Ewing had brought a huge offering from a Swiss church for people in the north who were suffering from drought. Our Kenyan host, however, had another thing on his mind and was not diligent in helping him get the money to the people. The funds were stolen, along with Brother Ewing's travel documents. A man of grace, Brother Ewing called us to pray for the thief, asking God to forgive him and draw him to Jesus. Later, I asked Brother Ewing why God allowed the offering to be stolen. He paused and said, sometimes we suffer so that others will learn. This was a lesson for the Kenyan brethren, who had been very casual with the great treasure entrusted to them by God. So when the Swiss church heard about what happened, they took another collection and doubled the offering. This time, the Kenyan congregation was very diligent in handling the funds. Brother Ewing also was quickly able to sort out his travel documents. God is always good in all things every day. For more encouragement, visit DebbieGriffith.com.
Well, we hope it was a good morning for you, and we're so glad that you've tuned into The Conversation. My name is Heather Fleece, and I'm here with my friend Cindy Olson. We are Julie Nelson-less today.
We are missing our third wheel.
We are.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how much more you and I get to talk when she's not here.
Oh, do you see me sitting back, taking my coffee? You're not going to be able to shut me up.
Don't tell her I said that. Julie and I are both the youngest children in our family, and so we love to fight for the microphone whenever we have the opportunity.
And I'm the oldest, rolling my eyes in the middle. So.
Exactly. But we are here today, and we're so excited for this particular conversation because we've invited Ruth Graham to come and be with us. And for those of you who do not know Ruth, she is an author and a speaker and also happens to be the daughter of the Reverend Billy Graham. And she is in studio with us today because she is here at Northwestern College for the Set Apart Conference for Women that they host every year. And she's one of the main speakers, and she's taken time to come. Ruth, welcome to The Conversation.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's going to be delightful.
Oh, we're happy you're here.
We like to think it's going to be delightful. Now, Ruth, I sense a little bit of an accent. Where is that coming from?
Well,
of course, I say Canada.
Born and raised in the South.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
a Montana gal.
Oh, okay.
And Heather, are you
Minnesota,
a...
born and bred. You betcha. Right. Ketchup, hot dish. Well, I love it.
Thank you.
The perfect picture of a Southern belle.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that I do, but I'm delighted to be a Southerner.
Oh, wonderful. Well, welcome to the Northland.
Thank you.
We're so glad to have you here. And I was thinking this morning as I was coming in, I grew up the youngest of six kids, mm-hmm. Ruth. And so every time I would get into a class in junior high or high school and they would announce my name and they would say, Heather Heinch, is Heather Heinch here? And I'd raise my hand and inevitably it would follow. Oh, you're Glenn's sister. Oh, you're Faith's sister. And I know how annoying sometimes that was for me. I can't even imagine what it must have been like for you growing up to have that last name. And, you know, I think there is probably some wonderful things to it, but I loved what I read that you have said, and that is that being the daughter of Billy Graham is part of what I am, but not who I am.
That's exactly right.
Can you explain a little bit more what's behind that?
Well, it's not who I am in the sense that I am a unique child of God. Yes, my father is Billy Graham. My mother was Ruth Bell Graham. And I'm very grateful that they were wonderful examples. But that's not who I am. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got to be my own person as God has called me into my ministry. So I have a unique place, and I'm happy to fill that role.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. So your ministry, Ruth, you know, sometimes I talk to people and I'm like, you know, can we hear God? How is he going to talk to us? What do I do next? What are my gifts?
Mm-hmm.
How were some of the ways that you were kind of led into this path that brought you to some of these great things you're doing now?
Well, it wouldn't be as one would choose. It was because of my own failures in my life mm-hmm. and the things that had happened to me that caused great grief, that caused great brokenness, and also I was given great grace. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to be able to pass that along. And in order to do that, I sort of had to share myself mm-hmm. and say, this is what I've been through. This is what I've experienced. And this is what God did. And I want to pass that on to you all. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got started. And I told somebody the other day, I'm an accidental person because mm-hmm. I never intended to do what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I didn't seek this. I wanted to be a wife and a mother, and I wanted to stay home. Mm-hmm. And when my life sort of collapsed around mm-hmm. me, then I really thought that God was going to be ashamed of me. He was going to not use me. He was, you know, I was going to be the one weak link in my family's mm-hmm. heritage. And was really concerned about that. I mean, heartbroken mm-hmm. over that. But he has shown me mm-hmm. that he loves broken things. He mm-hmm. uses broken things. He prefers broken things.
And people who know they're broken.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ruth, what was the first venue in which you then shared that story publicly?
Well, I'd been teaching Bible study and I'd been speaking since I was, you know, knee-high to a grasshopper, but because I was expected to, you know, that's what Billy Graham's family mm-hmm. did. They were mm-hmm. supposed
that's
to speak.
What
you
do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that, and I sort of parroted what people told me. And but it wasn't until my life was broken, and my sister Gigi, my oldest sister, was scheduled to speak at Samford University, and she couldn't make it because she had obligations with my father and mother. And she asked if I would fulfill that. I was scared to death. And I thought, you know, what do I share? What do I not share? Because I had spoken at a time, maybe years before, about my depression that I'd been through. And I was criticized for that. And I thought,
really?
You know, how much can I share? But I just stood up with these women and shared my heart and what I was going through and what had happened. And I resonated.
Yeah.
The message resonated because here I was, Billy Graham's daughter with a unique voice, a unique mm-hmm. experience, mm-hmm. and I was willing to share it.
Yeah.
And God
mm-hmm.
showed me that I had a real message to give. And then it wasn't long after that, again, Gigi was scheduled to be somewhere at a women's conference, and she couldn't be. So she said, would you take my sister? And they said, well, we really don't want her. She's not our first choice. Mm-hmm. And Gigi said, well, I can't be there. And they called me, and they said, well, you're really not our choice. Can't you talk mm-hmm. your sister? And I finally... About a week, we'd had this conversation. And finally, I looked at the lady over the phone, and I said, do you realize I'm God's first choice for you?
Wow.
And that's not typical of me. I'm not that bold. But That's when I sort of stepped in to my calling and what I believed God had called me to do.
They actually said, you're not our first choice. They verbalized
they
that, Ruth.
Yeah. They absolutely
and
did.
And what courage for you to keep going without resentment or just, I mean, you know, I have to be honest. A lot of us would probably shut the door, go sit down and kind of feel sorry for ourselves.
Yeah.
But instead, you kind of stayed open.
Well, that was God, because, again, it is not my way. I tend to be a little timid.
You know what? Amen to that, because sometimes the Holy Spirit will help me, and I'll be like, thank you, thank you, because where did that come from?
Yeah.
And
He steps in.
Yeah, but I think your openness, like, at what point did you become comfortable opening up so much so that the Holy Spirit, that the healing, and that the transparency could be so out there
I'm
for
still
you.
Not comfortable.
You look very comfortable.
When I, very often after I've spoken, I'll go back to the hotel room or go back to my home and I'll think, why did I do that? But again, this is what God's called me to do. He's gifted me for this. So I give it to him. And when I was going through so much and it was such a mess, I looked at him and I said, Lord, if you can ever use my mess, you're welcome to it. And he has proven that. And I'm so grateful because he does use broken things. Yeah. He doesn't discard. You know, it's, we may look at broken lives and say, oh, no, they're useless. You can't use them. Because we want, I think, historically, Christians have wanted perfect examples.
Yes, for sure.
Well, I am not one. But God still uses me because he values me as a broken person.
Well, and Ruth, what I hear you saying is that you have found that people are drawn to that authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that in myself, that when I can interact with someone or hear someone share that is willing to be real and even share the messy, hard stuff, I want to know them more because I resonate with that because I'm messy.
But that also allows for real ministry to take place.
Yeah.
Because if you're fellowshipping or ministering mass to mass, nothing's going on of significance. And some years ago, I went into church, and I was really having a difficult time. My husband had decided he was going to leave me, and I was really struggling with that. And I sat down, and a friend behind me leaned forward, and she said, oh, Ruth, you know, good to see you. How are you? And I said, oh, I'm fine. You know, put that mask on.
Oh, yeah,
on,
we've
and
all
I just,
been there.
Yes. And then afterwards, when the service started, I realized, you know, I told her a lie. I am not doing well here. So after the service, I went to her, and I confessed, and I said, I lied to you. I'm really struggling. She said, I am so glad you said that. She said, because I'm struggling, too. She said, let's go over here and pray together. Well, see, if you don't take your mask off, real ministry is not going to take place.
Now, you mentioned, Ruth, that your life is messy and there is some brokenness. And I heard depression as part of that and a husband who was planning to leave you. Would you be willing to share some other things that you struggled with? We know that the folks who listen and even ourselves, that we each have things that we struggle with. And to hear people who have worked through that and who God's healing has taken place in their lives is just an encouragement to us.
Well, my life has really encountered lots of things that you wouldn't expect Billy Graham's daughter to encounter.
Of course.
But,
you
know, I had my husband's infidelity, then the divorce, my depression that set in to the point of looking for razor blades. I had planned my suicide.
Oh, it's so strong. Yeah. Depression is so
it
powerful,
really is.
Physically, mentally, everything.
Yeah. And I had never known anybody depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
I didn't know what it looked like or what the symptoms were. And I was just a total mess. But God intervened, and I was able to get help. And let me just say here parenthetically that depression is a physical illness. We've put a stigma on it.
Right.
It's a physical illness that God has raised up scientists and doctors who can give you medications. And we need to be taking them if we are depressed. And there's nothing inferior about it. It's not a spiritual deficiency, please.
Yes.
It's not
permission
a spiritual
given to go get help.
Yes, exactly.
Everyone.
And but just the depression had set in, and during that time, my oldest daughter developed an eating disorder, and an eating disorder is not something you can confront head on.
Right, that's a very multidimensional.
Very much so. But her family's falling apart, and it's one thing she could control.
Yes.
My son was dabbling in drugs. And he was thousands of miles, not thousands, hundreds of miles from me. And then my youngest daughter had two babies out of wedlock. And I engaged in got involved in a rebound marriage that lasted for 5 weeks. And and my whole life was just crumbling. And I thought, what's happening? And I remember going home. And I love this story about my father. It's changed my life. I was going home, driving home to tell them that this marriage had fallen apart. They had warned me against it. And I thought, well, you know, they're not single parents and they're not struggling. And so I went ahead, strong-willed and stubborn. I married this man and realized again after 5 weeks that I had to go. And I went to see my parents, and I thought, what am I going to say to them? What are they going to say to me?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to say, we're tired of fooling with you, you've made your bed, you have to lie in it?
Yeah.
And fear really took over, but I plowed on through, and I was rounded the last bend in my father's driveway. He was standing there. Oh. He wrapped his arms around me, and he said, welcome home.
Oh, welcome home.
Yeah.
I mean, that's living it. That's a parent doing what God's asked us
to
do.
Mm-hmm.
And what a beautiful picture of our Heavenly Father.
Exactly
that's
right.
That's willing to do that.
And
you
coming home, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of us will run away, will deny, will cope in various ways that just bring us further into that trouble zone and bring the layers on.
I was too broken to run.
Yes.
I really came to the end of the road.
Mm-hmm. And were you in your late 30s, early 40s at that 40s, time,
Ruth? Yeah, I was in the 40s.
Okay.
Probably mid-40s. Uh-huh.
So not only dealing with your own struggles, but then watching your children, who you love and who God has given you such a love for, struggle as well.
That's right.
It's very difficult.
Well, God does that all the time, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He watches us struggle.
Yeah.
And he longs to reach out to us and to embrace us. And we continue struggling as long as we're in our own strength and doing our own thing. Mm-hmm. It is when we surrender. And one of the things that God has taught me, and more recently than formerly, is to tell ourselves the truth. And when I engaged in that second marriage, I was reading the scriptures, I was praying, but I was manipulating the scriptures that would support my view.
Okay.
I was praying what I wanted.
Sure.
I was listening to counselors who were supporting me rather than those who were saying, no, don't do this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we do that to ourselves all the time.
We do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we listen to the voices that we want to listen to that make us feel good. Wow, you are a part of the conversation today with the lovely, the authentic and real and grace-filled Ruth Graham. We're excited to talk with her more after the break, and we hope you can join us then as well. Love that by Toby Mac. If you can hold on.
That's right.
Isn't
we're
that
breaking
true?
Through.
Sometimes
we're doing
during
it together,
our day.
Gals. Yep.
That's what we're doing is we're holding on. Welcome back to the conversation. I'm Heather Fleece here with my friend Cindy Olson. And our new friend, Ruth Graham, is in studio with us today. Ruth is one of the main speakers at the Set Apart Women's event at Northwestern College and has agreed to come and spend some time with us, and we're already in love with her. Ruth, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, I know that the Billy Graham Crusades were all over, not only the United States, but all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we're curious, did you travel with your family to the Crusades?
No.
You did not?
No. Mother and Daddy were very concerned that we grew up as normally as possible. So mother stayed home with us. Now, we went to a few. I can remember going to the New York Crusade in 57 when I was just 6 years old.
Okay.
And the main impression was the crowds. You know, that's
powerful.
What I remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when I was a teenager, I went to some of the European Crusades and got to see some of the European culture. They thought that would be good for my education. But Daddy always felt, and Mother felt, that if Daddy took us to the Crusades, it's like a general taking his family to battle.
Mm-hmm.
Daddy was there to do his work. He was very focused and concentrated. He didn't need, you know, five little children running around after him. So we respected that.
Yeah. Well, and he was going in to do battle, if you
That's
ask
right.
me.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness. And I can't imagine as a little six-year-old how overwhelming that crowd would have been. Mm-hmm. Now, did you watch on TV then?
Yes, we did.
You did.
We
okay.
always watched on TV, and whether we wanted to or not. And then always.
I love it. Every family is the same.
That's right. That's right. And then on Sunday afternoon, we would listen to the Hour of Decision every Sunday afternoon. And it usually originated from wherever Daddy was. And so he may be in Africa for 6 months. He may be in Australia for 6 months, but we could hear his voice and we could hear him report on what was happening where he was. So we were a part of his ministry in that way. And I also discovered some years ago, I wrote a book about him, Legacy of Faith And I went back through my files and my letters because I thought, you know, I don't have many memories because Daddy wasn't home. But I went back through and found all the letters that he had written me. And my daddy wrote me postcards. Please, I'm getting ready to land in Stockholm for these meetings. Would you pray? Including us in his ministry.
I love that.
Now I do that for my grandchildren.
Right. So a parent asking you to pray,
yes,
let alone someone like Billy Graham, mm-hmm, who's got a lot of, I bet there is so much pressure, like going to school or just living life, even as a youngster. Did you just sometimes feel too much, or did your parents do a really good job of keeping you kind of in your own
world?
They
kept us relatively normal. When we grew up around public school in the mountains of North Carolina, we were just the reverend's kids. I mean, it wasn't a big deal. But yet when we were sent away to boarding school, because Mother felt that that was probably would get a better education. Plus, that's the way she had grown up. Mm-hmm. But when she sent us away, then other people treated us differently.
Interesting.
And they thought we were special. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, we're not special. We're different. Being different, mm-hmm, doesn't mean we're special. And I didn't have any sense of entitlement. Mm-hmm. I felt very strongly, mm-hmm, that I was just me. And they could have, you know, have expectations on Mother and Daddy, but I wasn't going to live up to their expectations. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of time trying to do that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But that's a dead end.
Mm-hmm. And was that more so what you put on yourself, do you think, Ruth, versus what they tried to put on you?
Mother and Daddy never put anything on us except, mm-hmm, to serve God and to fulfill his calling in our lives. But other people put expectations,
sure,
on, and they still do. And fortunately, I've been able to work beyond that and just say, okay, I am me, and if you don't like me, then that's okay.
Yeah. You know, I work with junior hires, Ruth. That's my passion and where God has put me. And I do have a lot of students who are pastors' kids or missionaries' kids or, you know, professors at college, Christian college kids. Can you help me? What are some tangible things that I can do to love them well and to celebrate the uniqueness of the fact that they are different, but not necessarily special?
I think that you just affirm who they are and the gifts that God's given them. And I don't think you need to set them apart as anything different. But just to accept them and love them and tell them the truth. You know, just tell them, you know, whenever something's going on or they're wrong or whatever. But I think the biggest thing is just acceptance. And when I was a little girl and growing up, and there were certain people in the community that I could just be myself with. Mm. And that's valuable. That's so valuable.
Yeah.
Now, what was a family dinner like? Was it ever just like, was it always like wonderful conversation?
No, my goodness.
And faith-filled, or was it like, pass those pickles?
Candlelight.
Hardly. No, it was a very real family dinner. And we had a Lazy Susan, the turntable in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And so we would, you know, fight for our food, and the boys would sling it around.
Sure.
But it was a very normal family.
It's normal.
And very dysfunctional family. And, I, you know, I have to say, because my father was gone.
Yeah.
That breeds dysfunction. And so that's, I don't want people to think that, oh, it must have been wonderful and God did this and God certainly saw us through, but not without difficulties. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Now, mm-hmm, describe the family for us. You had your mom, Ruth Bell
Graham. Ruth Bell Graham. Uh-huh.
And then go ahead and give us the order and what the age range is.
Gigi is...
I love that, Gigi.
Yeah. Her real name was Virginia.
Okay.
In the South, when you have girls, the first girl is named for the mother's mother. The second girl is named for the father's mother. And the third girl is named for the mother. So that's how we feel. Because I had Gigi was Virginia. Then Anne was named for my father's mother. And I'm named for my mother.
Oh,
and then we have Franklin and we have Ned.
Oh, okay. I love it.
And between Ned and Gigi, how many years total?
Probably 12, 13.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, five children under the age of 13.
Mm-hmm.
Your mother is a saint.
But that, I mean, it sounds like a lot of fun, but it is just, it's life, it's humans,
life. Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a lot of different dynamics to it.
Yeah.
But right now, is everyone kind of coming back together? I mean, as children like ebb and flow and they go through their hardships,
mm-hmm,
I mean, are you finding that your family's kind of being brought back under the tent?
I think so.
Comfort?
I definitely think as far as our hearts, but we have such schedules that we rarely see each other.
Okay.
And so we can't, I try to see my brothers and sisters when I can, but, you know, I'm gone or they're gone and I never know where Franklin is. And very often I don't know where Anne is, but it's just, that's our lives.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, the gift of the pen. This seems to be in the family, and you have it also. Were you always a great writer? I mean, I remember reading a little bit. Your folks met at Wheaton,
mm-hmm,
and your mom was a poet. and a writer?
Yes, very much so. If you read her, if you want to know who my mother was, you read her poetry.
And a friend of mine said she has a beautiful, she believes a beautiful Christmas book.
That, yes. And she's, One Wintry Night.
Right. Mm-hmm. And my friend Rebecca just says it is a dream
it's
and
a beautiful
treasure piece, something that she has near her all the time. Mm-hmm. Now, it's such a gift to be able to express yourself through writing. And you have that also. Did you guys like practice, or did you have little journals? How did that family, you know?
I kept diaries since I still have them since I was like 8 or 9 years old. Mm. Now the diaries back then were, you know, it rained today and we had hamburgers for dinner, but I kept them faithfully and I still have them. I've kept them. My mother, when I was 13, gave me a little leather journal. And in the front, she said, I only count the hours that shine. And she said, I want you to write. And so I began to write, and I've been probably a chronic journaler. It's sort of a burden at times, but I journal every day. Mm-hmm. And some of it's not worth anything. Some of it's just, you know, my pouring out my heart, my struggles. And then I use it as a tool in my devotional life. And I say, okay, God, I've written this, and this is what's on my heart. Speak to that. Mm-hmm. And then I'll open the Bible, and invariably there's just a word of encouragement or a word addressing my struggle. So journaling has been a very important part of my life. Never dreamed any of it would be used for publication. But we mined those journals for both books.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, those books are great, and I'm looking forward to talking about them more. But I do have one question. Mm-hmm. When you're sitting in front of a blank page, have you ever just sat there and you're not able to kind of put pen to paper? You get that block?
More often you want to think about it.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, you just sit there. I'm not really good with just a blank page. Mm-hmm. I've got to have some snippets the way I like to write is have someone to talk to me and pull it out of me and ask the right questions. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm just sitting in front of a blank page, I go, wait a minute. But I really do need someone alongside of me to sort of help me think through, talk through. I do it better that way.
And as you go into writing these books, where is the passion coming from? What are you thinking as you're typing these words or writing these words and thinking about those who might read them?
Well, the passion really comes out of my burden for people to know that they are not sitting in the pew by themselves with a broken heart, that there are many people with broken hearts. They're not alone. They don't have to face it alone. They can get help. And so that was really my driving passion, because I was the person in the pew with a broken heart, and I thought I was the only one.
Yeah. Oh, I've been there.
Yes, a lot of people have.
Sure.
I thought everyone was perfect, and I was just the only one stumbling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not true. Mm-hmm. So that was the passion that drove that book. And then part of the second book was really, what is God like? What is God like? You know, so many people have this view of him as harsh and sitting in heaven just waiting to nab us. But the scripture says that Jesus is the exact representation of God. So I wanted to look at Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so I looked over his shoulder in the Gospels as he acted with real people in real time. And so that was a great book to write. I enjoyed doing that. Putting myself in the scenes.
Is that the step into the Bible?
No, that I've written more than two books. That is Fear Not Tomorrow. God is already there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people on your blog, by the way, Ruth has a blog. I just typed
good.
In Ruth Graham's blog and it popped right up, and it's just a wonderful gift of her thoughts and her feelings and her love for the Lord. But boy, people have really been moved by those two books in particular. In Every Pew Sits a Broken Heart and Fear Not Tomorrow, God is Already There.
That's right.
They've really, God is just using your brokenness and your willingness and bringing it together to
bless
other people.
Don't we have a great God?
Don't we have
that.
A great God?
That is wonderful.
Yeah. You know, the word tells us that he will take everything and use it for the good of those who love him in Romans 8. And it's just so fun to see someone sitting in front of us and listening to someone who shares that same thing.
Right. Well, you know, but sometimes I can do well. And then there's some days, and I don't know, Ruth, how you handle this, and I'd love to know, but I can't quite let that sink in.
Mm.
I start to go back into old coping modes or covering modes and not really, you know, trusting, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any little kickstarts for people or for yourself where you if you're starting to not open up and trust and be at peace with where you're at?
We've got to give ourselves permission to be human.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to get it right all the time. And I think when I don't get it right, I beat myself up and I let the enemy come in just begin to accuse me of this and accuse me of that. And I have to sort of stop. Wait a minute.
Stop.
This is not where I want to be. But I need to give myself grace and then just take a break and sort of go do something else or just sidetrack yourself a little bit so that you can come back at
it.
Otherwise, it's you are going to beat yourself up.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Do a little sidetrack.
Mm-hmm. Sydney, what have you found that helps you in those times?
Well, you know what? I think just stopping and just, like you said, doing something else. Just like making myself do something else.
Yeah.
And even if I'm walking up the stairs, and there have been times where I shouldn't, but I said, I'm going to go take a bath. I'm going to go sit in the bathtub and I'm just sit there.
Yeah.
And I force myself, I go up, and then by the end of the bath, I'm like, well, things aren't so bad. Mm. Here we go. Mm-hmm. Restart.
Mm-hmm.
So I do love that. I do love that. And I have to remember to do that. You can always push reset.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly right.
And I love to reach out to a friend, friend who knows me and loves me
for
who I am and can help to speak truth in my life when I'm deep in the place where I'm not hearing the truth. Mm-hmm. Well, you're involved in the conversation with the lovely Ruth Graham. We'll be back to hear more about her life and her journey on The Conversation.
Gary, my husband and I are at the point of divorce, though he has agreed to look at some of your materials with me. Can you give us a starting point?
I would suggest you start with my book, The Five Love Languages. Ask him if he would be willing to read the first chapter this week, if you read the first chapter. And at the end of the week, you will share one thing you learned, and he will share one thing he learned. It's a good way to get started. Then, if he feels good about it and you feel good about it, take chapter two the next week. Work your way through the book chapter a week. By the end of the book, I think you both will have rediscovered how to love each other, how to stimulate warm feelings toward each other, and chances are he'll be willing to share another book with you. Sharing a book is one way to stimulate marital growth.
Dr. Gary Chapman is the author of The Five Love Languages. For more answers, visit startmarriageright.com.
Be strong in the Lord and never give up hope. You're gonna do great things, I already know. God's got his hand on you, so don't live life in fear. Forgive and forget, but don't forget why you're here. Take your time.
Welcome back to The Conversation. I'm Heather Fleece with my friend and cohort today, Cindy Olson. We're flying duo without our friend Julie, but we're excited to have her
we miss her,
back with us.
We're having fun.
We are,
it's
and
like
how
we're
can
kids
we not?
In a playground.
Because we've got another girl here. Talking with us and sharing with us. Ruth Graham is in studio today. She's in Minnesota, even though she's a Southern girl, to be a part of the Set Apart Conference, which is a women's conference that Northwestern College does every year and is such an impactful event, and has come over to be with us before she rejoins all the festivities over there. So thanks, Ruth, for being here with us.
This is great fun. I'm sort of jealous.
I'm glad
that I'm
glad.
Not in Julie's chair.
Well, we can maybe see when she's going to be gone
talk.
Again. We'll drive up and drive down and get you.
That'd be great.
We love it.
We love how you've been talking about your mother and your dad and what a gift they were to you. But I also know that you lost your mom in 2007. And, Cindy and I have been talking as we are getting older.
Yeah,
I just turned 39 last week.
Well, you're young.
The big 4-0 is coming up, but I'm also the youngest of six kids. Mm. And so lost my dad 4 years ago to lung cancer. Mm. And it's just a really hard place to be at in life. And I'm finding that more and more of my friends are entering into that place where their parents are aging, their parents are failing, and they're having to anticipate them being gone. And it is a hard process. Mm-hmm. And can you share a little bit about what that was like for you and with your siblings and with your dad and how that's like now?
Well, it's a very difficult time, but my mother had been really infirm for a lot of years. And she had degenerative arthritis. Her spine had collapsed.
Wow.
She'd had her hips replaced, I don't know how many times. And she just really had suffered a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like the woman with the issue of blood, she'd suffered at the hands of many physicians.
Mm.
And my mother certainly had. So she, when the time came, we knew it was time for her to go home. And very hard to confront, but we also knew that she'd get a new body.
Yeah.
And she'd get to be with Jesus, who she'd adored all her life. And so we wouldn't have held her back at all.
Sure.
But to watch her struggle for breath and to realize that the hours were short, and to watch my father, you know, as he said goodbye to the love of his life, that was hard. And I can remember we were there when she died, and for us, for me, it was sort of a non-event. Mother just quit breathing.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't struggle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she struggled for a breath, but she wasn't in pain, and she was just she just stepped into heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And but we all, of course, wept, and we had to sort of get ourselves together to go tell our children because they were going to make a press release, and we wanted them to know first. And then when the funeral director came, first Mother did not want anyone else to tend to her body, so my sisters and I tended to her body and got her in a pretty gown and changed her over. And
wow.
And it was really sweet because I always wondered what I would do with my mother's dead body.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, I don't think I want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so sweet. The Lord just took over.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my way of just ministering to my body, my mother's body. This was the body who'd given me birth. This is the body who'd knelt before the throne to pray for me.
Yeah.
This was the body who tended to me. So it was a privilege to do that. And so we took care of her. And the funeral home came to claim her body. And they put her on the gurney and put her in the hearse. And I just wept.
Yeah.
And my mother was leaving the mountain, her precious mountain, for the last time.
Oh, yeah.
And I can remember watching the hearse go down the mountain and just weeping.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And someone came over and said, oh, don't cry. And I thought, no, I've got to cry.
Yeah.
I've got to grieve.
Yes.
Grief is so important.
Yeah,
we've
right.
got to learn how to grieve. In this country, we don't do it very well.
Yeah.
And especially, I think, as Christians, we think, oh, you got to buck up. You got to be strong.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus is victorious. No, Jesus wept. He grieved over his friends.
Right? Yeah.
And so I think we need to grieve and grieve as long as it takes. Each person grieves differently.
Very true.
And I lost a grandchild to adoption. And I remember grieving very deeply. Mm. And my daughter grieved very deeply. But we grieved differently.
Yeah.
And my daughter got angry at me because I wasn't grieving the way she was grieving. But we have to grieve. And we have to grieve the way we want and for as long as we want.
Mm-hmm.
And if people don't let you, go find somebody else to be with.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, and especially in a large family, when you have five kids and a dad all grieving in a different way, it often can cause tension if I expect my sister or my brother to grieve in the same way that I do. You know, if you've got somebody in your family who's not a crier for some reason, even publicly, but you are a crier, you associate their lack of crying with the fact that they don't miss your mom or that they, you know, aren't grieving. But the truth is we all grieve in different ways. And to give myself permission to grieve how I need to grieve,
that's
but
right.
then to turn around and give that same permission to other people and how they need to grieve.
Yeah, and Ruth, your whole theme of like making acceptance for where people are at and who they are is just really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge gift because, you know, if you think about it, our truths of how we perceive things are not always real.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
They're tainted by baggage of the past, you know, our frailties.
Yeah.
And then the enemy is going to put in truths that are going to try to put us in captivity. So really staying close to God and accepting people for where they are at and loving them, you're really walking the walk and you're really helping.
Well, I trust so. And I trust that I am a channel of God's grace and that he has put so much into me that I can pass that on. I mean, it really is what I want to do and want him to use. My mother used to say, no one's useless. They always serve as a bad example. So,
oh, I love that one.
So I feel like my life has been a bad example, but at least God's allowing me to use it and redeem it for his glory.
Oh, I'll say. I just, you know what? I just smile. Sitting next to you. I really like you.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm
like
so
you
glad
too.
You're here.
If you're just joining us, we're here on The Conversation today with Ruth Graham, who is an author and a speaker, a wife, a sister, a grandma, and the daughter of Reverend Billy Graham and Ruth Bell Graham. Ruth, talk to us. What does an average week look like for you? I mean, we're talking to this young lady, and she has just come. She's just come from Tennessee. She's going to go to San Antonio after this. I mean, what does it look like for you?
Well, this is an unusual week.
Okay.
I do a good bit of traveling, but this is an unusual week. And you know, my week is going to the grocery store and going to exercise class and visiting with friends and a prayer group and all that sort of stuff. My life is boringly normal.
Oh, that's good.
But I do, you know, I do travel to speak, and I do sit in the office to write and do my blogs and respond to people's letters. But it's boring.
Mm-hmm. Now, the blog, you're doing a really great job at it.
Oh, thank
you. I find
you.
Myself so hesitant to jump in the world of Facebook and blogging. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't come naturally. I'm a writer. You know, I jot tons of notes or I talk.
But it sounds like you were a little hesitant at first, too.
Very much so.
But then understood that if you could get it out there, that more people would be able to hear your story and hear truth.
That's right. And I also have a blog on BeliefNet, and that doesn't get nearly as traffic, which is sort of unusual for me. I don't understand that. But I love to blog, and I love when people respond.
Yeah.
I don't like it if I just write into a black hole.
Mm. Yeah.
But I really have enjoyed it. And, you know, as long as God gives me the ability.
Mm. How can people find out more about you and your books and your blogs? Where would be a good place to go on the Internet?
Well, they can go to Ruth Graham and Friends.
Okay.
Dot
all spelled
org.
Out?
Yes.
RuthGrahamandFriends.org.
Then they can go to Ruth Graham's blog. And that's really updated, you know, quite frequently.
Do you try to do every third day? What do you try to do?
No, you know, it depends on my schedule, and it really depends on if God's given me something. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they're just really dry. You just don't have anything.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm just not going to put something out there. And if I'm really dry, I might use a quote or I might tell a story or something. Mm-hmm. But I put a recipe on there one week. So
I like that. What was it? I'm all about food.
Brunswick stew, and it was very good.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I fill in when I'm dry.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said you went to exercise class.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of class? What do you like to do?
Well, I don't like exercise at all.
Good. I don't either.
I think a lot of people can probably relate to that.
But I try to discipline myself, and my main source of exercise is walking. Mm-hmm. But I do go to yoga.
Oh,
not the woo-woo kind of yoga. This is just pure exercise.
Yeah.
And I just, she's got me bending in pretzel shapes, and I just, my bones are too old for this.
Yeah.
But it's good for me.
Oh,
I need to do that.
Now, do you go
that.
To the one that's really warm, like that where they particularly keep the room warm? Cindy, don't you do that sometimes?
Well, once in a while, but
is it called hot yoga?
Yeah, I think it's, there's different names for it. Because yoga is kind of spreading out just into an exercise form.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and core strengthening.
Yeah, it doesn't always have to come with all of the other stuff. And actually, I just gave my niece 2 Christian yoga books.
Oh.
Well, you know, I don't even know if it's called Christian yoga, but it's like Christian, you know, stretching movement, you know, because a lot of it can really help. But yeah, there's all sorts. There's the really hot.
Well, this just is at the bottom of the basement of the Baptist church. So it's nothing fancy.
Yeah. No, I love it. There's no silk pillows all over anything.
No, not at all.
Yeah, but I just want to take pause with something you said. You know, I really want to take this as a little present home, and hopefully for everyone out there, is that you kind of say sometimes it's dry, and you say it so matter-of-factly, and you say you just deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? So much we try to push through. I don't know, especially American culture. It's just like we try to make it happen. It has to work a certain way. Sometimes we're in a quiet place when things aren't always coming out, you know.
Well, and I think we assume that because of Scripture and all the things that we see of Moses and David and Esther, that their lives were always like that. But, you know, Moses, it wasn't always about miracles. You know, he was doing the day-to-day judging the people and handling administrative things. Mm-hmm. And David was fighting and was ruling over the kingdom. It was just normal stuff. God wasn't always speaking miraculously to them, and and we need to understand that and just continue to pursue God and continue to ask him to speak to us and listen.
And he is the God of the mundane.
He's
there too.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, what a gift today to have a conversation with the wonderful, the lovely Ruth Graham. She is the epitome of somebody who has received God's love and wants to share it with other people.
Yes.
Ruth, thank you. For being here with
us.
Oh, the treat was mine. Thanks.
Oh,
and we've got some good things to think about in the future,
Cindy? I'm walking with a spring in my step out of this studio. I loved it.
We hope you have a great rest of your day. Thank you for joining us in the conversation, and have a great weekend. We'll see you next Friday.
See you next week.